Welcome to today's Innovative Ideas podcast. My name is Paul Howard, and I'm a senior fellow and director of the Manhattan Institute's Center for Medical Progress. Our guests today are Dr. George Chrysanthis, a former senior executive in the pharmaceutical industry with long-term achievements in academia, holding professorships in healthcare management, marketing, economics, and political science. He is currently professor of healthcare management and marketing and director of the Center for Healthcare Research and Management at the Fox School of Business at Temple University. He's joined by Pratep Khedkar, the managing principal of ZS Associates, a global pharmaceutical and biotech industry practice. ZS Associates is a global consulting firm specializing in sales and marketing issues with a heavy focus on the healthcare industry. He also manages the firm's Philadelphia office and has worked exclusively with the pharmaceutical industry during his 13-year tenure with the firm. Gentlemen, thank you very much for joining me today.
Thank you.
Thank you, Paul.
We're going to be talking today about a very interesting paper that you published just last July. It's called "Can Access Limits on Sales Representatives to Physicians Affect Clinical Prescription Decisions? A Study of Recent Events with Diabetes and Lipid Drugs." Now, the reason I feel like this paper is very interesting is because it touches on broad changes in how physicians access information, the kinds of information that they receive, particularly from pharmaceutical firms, and what happens when those channels are changed or restricted. There's an assumption, or I think a prevailing bias, particularly in academia, that information from profit-driven firms, that is, from pharmaceutical firms, is inherently biased and leads to the overutilization of newer drugs, the underutilization of high-quality generic and more affordable medicines, and in general to higher healthcare costs and perhaps too many adverse events from the rapid uptake of drugs like Vioxx that seem promising at first but may have unseen side effects that only become visible after they're utilized by large patient populations. So, gentlemen, could you just begin, George or Pratep, by talking about the environment that you see today in terms of physician access to information about prescription drugs, and what questions or issues out there drove you to do the study, and then talk about some of the key variables that you measure in your study.
Okay, I can get started on the first question. I think in terms of physician access, about 10 years ago, access to reps was not really an issue. And when I'm talking about access, I'm talking about specific policies instituted at the group practice or the physician's office, which somehow restrict how many or how often pharmaceutical reps can come in and talk to the physician about detailing. And it used to be that, you know, it used to be a five-minute conversation every time a rep met a physician. Over time, that interval has shrunk. Now it's like a two-minute call. And, of course, the amount of reps that can come in has also been restricted. So just to give you a sense, depending on where you measure it, ZS has access monitor data. Physicians with both severe and moderate restrictions, if I were to count them together, are roughly in the 40-45% range. So it's become a significant problem in terms of extent. But the context is also that the physician is getting information from many channels, by the way. They're getting information from their peers. They're reading up on journals. They're certainly getting information from conferences that they attend. They may be actually going out to websites and so on and getting information from third-party sources in that fashion. So the rep is one channel, and of course, it is also the most personal channel because they are getting information where they can actually have a Q&A about specific questions they have about the drug, the therapy area, the patient profile, et cetera, et cetera. So that's kind of the context in which pharmaceutical companies try to provide this information. Now, one thing to keep in mind, unlike almost the rest of advertising, the content of what the rep is allowed to discuss is extremely highly regulated. Every page in that rep's presentation, every word that appears on it, the messages they are allowed to use, the things they are allowed to talk about, have been approved and vetted by the FDA. And so the content has been actually approved by the government, and which is, of course, the disinterested third party here. So I want to provide that context. And now the question is, given that the content is so restricted, should the physician have the choice and the freedom to interact with the pharma company in any manner, or other sources, including the reps? That's kind of the initial problem that has begun to, you know, excite a lot of people in terms of where is access going? And if you restrict access, are there unintended consequences on the physician's decision-making because they don't have full access to information, and thereby perhaps on the patient's health.
Paul, this is George. The genesis of our research actually started when I was in industry, and I was actually responsible for Salesforce strategy, sales operations, and also looking at new Salesforce models. And one of the things I saw over time was that access to physicians by sales reps was increasingly becoming a problem. First, from a financial standpoint, you know, if companies continue to send reps into physicians' offices that are blocked, then clearly there's a cost in terms of a waste of resources that could be spent better somewhere else. But more importantly, when I saw these trends, and these trends, by the way, if you go to the New England, Upper Midwest, the Northwest, the West Coast, these are areas that have severe access limits, where MSAs in those areas have severe access to as much as 20% or more of the physicians in those areas. I started wondering, as was concerned about, what was happening to the flow of regulated medical information to physicians in these areas. If they're not seeing sales reps, then clearly they're missing out on some valuable information that can be provided. How else are they getting this information? And if so, if they are getting it, are they getting, you know, the same type of information? So our study, if you look at a map of the United States, like done by ZS Associates over time, we see tremendous variation in the United States by the degree of access limits that are confronting sales reps to see physicians. And with that variation poses then a very interesting empirical problem, and that is, do we see differences in physician responses to new information as we vary the degree of access that they have to sales reps while controlling for other relevant items that could affect the adoption of new products or respond to products that have negative medical information? And in a nutshell, very simply stated, when we did this in our study, over a large cross-section of physicians using three cases, one, a first-in-class product launch, sitagliptin, under the brand name Januvia, and then two negative news cases, one, the perceived negative enhanced trial result of Vytorin, and the first black box warning of Avandia, we found exactly what economic theory would have predicted, and that is, when physicians are in more restricted access offices to regulated medical information, as Pratap indicated, physicians adopted less or switched less who are in more restricted offices than physicians in more open access offices, and physicians in those restricted offices also took longer to adopt and longer to switch away from the negative news, all things being equal. So while we didn't look at patient outcomes, clearly we saw some evidence of a potential that patients could be certainly be placed in harm by the unintended effects of these practices.
In effect, and I think some of the economic literature talks about this, so, you know, the firms are highly motivated, they have a financial interest in ensuring that the physicians are educated both about their products and about their competitors' products. So if one firm happens to believe it has a comparative advantage, and again, as you both noted, all of this information is vetted by the FDA, it's submitted to the FDA and approved by their Office of Promotional Products before it can be distributed to physicians, that information is vetted by the agency and then distributed to physicians. But these firms are highly motivated to distribute and ensure that physicians have this information before they make their prescribing decisions. As you said, the economic literature suggests that this would happen. And it tells you that this, in fact, was the case, that physicians changed their behavior more slowly, both in positive ways, when there was a drug out there that might be an important addition to their therapeutic armamentarium, or in negative ways, they were slightly slower to change their practice if negative information came out about drugs. Do you think that is attributed to, as we just said, to the competitive nature of the market, where these actors have a high incentive or very good incentive to reach out to physicians and ensure that they have the latest medical information?
There's an excellent article that we referenced in our paper. It's by Jay Green. It's entitled Pharmaceutical Market Research and the Prescribing Physician. It's in the Annals of Internal Medicine, 2007. A lot of people think that the system of pharmaceutical detailing was something that was imposed by the industry on physicians, when in fact, that was not the case. Over 50 years ago, the system of information that came through sales reps was actually done in partnership by the medical industry with the pharmaceutical industry. I think a recognition that as new drugs were rapidly coming into the market, drugs that were different than what was priorly, you know, produced and brought on, and also as drugs became more complex, that there would be a need for some system of information transfer by which physicians could be informed about the latest drugs, about the costs and the benefits, you know, the risks. And this pharmaceutical detailing system was a result. And this has basically worked for the past 50 years or so. But over the last 5 years, maybe a little earlier, we've seen this narrative about conflict of interest or, you know, comments demonizing the industry or somehow that the information that comes from industry is somehow tainted, biased, or inaccurate. As Pratap indicated, this is FDA-regulated information. So the question becomes, you know, and as what we pose in a paper, let's test these assumptions and see whether or not the individuals that advocate, you know, these barriers restricting the flow of information, does this really, you know, provide unintentional harm to physicians? And our paper shows, I think, quite conclusively that, in fact, there are a number of unintended effects that we have to be very careful about restricting the flow of regulated, and I want to emphasize that again, FDA-regulated medical information.
And I think a very interesting nuance, Paul, is that different physicians have different needs. You know, talk about a primary care versus a specialty specialist. Now, what happens for a typical specialist? They need to know about, you know, 15 to 20 drugs because they're in a very narrow area. There aren't that many drugs in that area. And so if I know about 15 to 20 drugs, I can keep up with what's going on in terms of new information because I'm a deep specialist and I don't need to know about a lot of different things. Now, in general, though, there are probably 300 to 400 promoted brands in the U.S. So imagine the plight of a primary care physician who has to maybe stay current with 150 or 200 of them because he does use them from time to time. Now, it's easy to say, yeah, the physician should keep up with 200 brands, and including all the information that might be generated, including new products that are coming up that they may not have heard about. And so the idea is, if that is the problem of information, we need to make sure that all the channels that are available are available. And it's not to try to force the physician to use certain channels more than others, but it's to leave the choice up to the open market to make sure that information can flow freely. And we are making sure that the information is not biased. You know, if it's off-label information, if it's information about an indication that has not been blessed by the FDA because there's a lack of clinical trials, etc., all that has been taken care of in filtering the information, whether it comes from the rep or it's on the pharma company's website or in some brochure at a conference. And all those filters apply. And then beyond that, then the question is, shouldn't all channels be available because the PCP who needs to stay current with 150 things may not even know what questions to ask about which drug because, of course, there's hundreds of news articles about these things every year.
I mean, Pratap and I would argue, Paul, that just like in actual product markets, you know, the most efficient and most effective outcomes that can be produced for society is where you have competition. And this is also what happens in the flow of medical information. Physicians can make the best diagnosis and select the best treatment option for their patients when they have access to a competitive landscape of all relevant types of FDA-regulated medical information. They cannot make the best and most informed decisions when we arbitrarily, especially for ideological reasons, say that some forms of regulated information just don't happen to meet with our approval simply because of the source. So we would argue that, you know, competition of regulated medical information is the best way for physicians to be most informed and then use their training along with the needs, particular individual needs of their patient, to make the right diagnosis and make the most optimal treatment decision. And for us, we believe that approach will lead to the most preferred health outcomes, likely, by the way, most effective cost outcomes, okay? Because when you misdiagnose a patient, you give treatment options that are not optimal, you're likely to have other healthcare costs result.
And
so
I think that
would be the implication of our paper.
And I think that's, you know, I thought it was one of the most interesting things that you did find access use patterns varied both depending on restriction, but also about, as Pratap noted just a moment ago, depending on whether that physician was a GP, a general practitioner, or a specialist, especially in this time of healthcare reform, we're looking at asking general practitioners to take on and other adjuncts like that may have prescribing ability, like nurse practitioners, to take on more responsibility for patients. At the same time, we may be closing off more access to information for them. You know, is that an additional element people and particularly policymakers should be concerned about? You know, given the findings of this study,
I'm going to go further. You are correct, Paul, in saying that our study clearly showed that where physicians have a greater need and a greater difficulty of collecting information, like primary care physicians, or do not have the required expertise to treat every disease that they see, we saw that the severity variations of access limits affected primary care physicians much more so than the knowledgeable specialists for the disease areas that we found. We also found that for the new product launch case, access limits mattered more than in the negative news cases. When you think about it, in a new first-in-class product launch case, reps provide, relatively speaking, more novel information that is new to the market, as opposed to negative medical information, such as a black box warning or clinical trial, which tends to, reps may provide some of that information, but it's coming from many other sources, you know, FDA, from conferences, medical journals, and pronouncements, or the physician's own clinical practice. We also found other nuances, like, for example, in the Avandia case, we found that diabetologists and endocrinologists actually took longer to respond to the black box warning than other physicians. And you can see why. You know, these physicians likely have the most severe diabetes patients, which means even with a black box warning, they may calculate that the perceived risk drug with a black box warning, it is still worth doing this drug even with that risk. So in other words, our analysis actually picked up the nuances on how physicians use their training, weigh the information in which they get, and weigh the relative risks and benefits of various drug option therapies for the particular needs of their patients. We didn't treat, you know, physicians as somehow illiterate or people who are duped by pharmaceutical detailers. On the other hand, our model actually shows that physicians are quite sophisticated, and they will use the information as appropriate. And of course, as Pratap says, there's an array of other channels that they can use. And by the way, even in open offices, a physician can always say, "No, I don't want to see a detailer." Okay, they always have that freedom. So,
and I think the other element that we didn't explicitly discuss in the paper is that a pharmaceutical rep is bringing also a lot of other patient resources, mm-hmm. like samples, which are not just free samples, but a physician absolutely needs for titration and so on, to use these samples so the patient doesn't have to go to the pharmacy and see how, you know, this particular drug will work with their body for the first couple of weeks or whatever. There are copay coupon offers, which are basically subsidies provided to the patient to reduce their cost burden. There may be other patient education materials. So there's a range of patient resources and the information that the physician will typically welcome, because they are then the custodian of knowing what to do with it and passing on what is appropriate to their treatment of the patient. And so that's another point I think I want to, you know, unlike other advertising where you might make the case, oh, there's a lot of volume of advertising and it's targeted at a naive person who may not have the education to discriminate. But here you have one of the most expert consumers of information in the world, because of their training, and because there are only a few of them. I mean, a typical brand at the most details, you know, in somewhere like 100,000 physicians, not more, person to person. And so you're talking about a fairly select audience, and that is why I think having the free market flow of information for a sophisticated audience is probably the right thing to do, because this audience can discriminate.
Mm-hmm. So a critical paper, obviously, in bringing, I think, you know, for the first time, at least that I've seen, some empirical data to the debate over the impact of pharmaceutical industry detailing on physicians and physician behavior when those channels of information are restricted. It's certainly very nice because it's in effect a controlled experiment. You can look at, you know, MSAs and even down to group practice level what effect these types of restrictions have. Let's look for a moment, you know, before we wrap up, at the future of prescriber access to prescription drug information. You know, I think broadly speaking, the industry is changing. It's changing in a lot of different ways. I think close to 8 in 10 prescriptions now in the U.S., maybe it's 75%, maybe it's closer to 80% now, are for generics. So that's by volume, not obviously by price. So the market is shifting broadly towards generics, both as patents expire and as plans, insurance plans become much more aggressive about controlling healthcare costs. But I also think there's a movement towards more consumer involvement in healthcare decisions to ensure that they know the risks and benefits and, frankly, the prices of different therapeutic options they pursue, whether it's surgery or prescription drugs or you know, watchful waiting for some diseases. What's the future of prescriber and also patient access in this environment when we're concerned about both about healthcare costs, but also about, as I think you alluded to a few moments ago, the total environment that we're operating in? So a physician and a patient are facing very nuanced choices about their age, their health status, other drugs they may be taking. You know, how do you optimize the information and the outcomes, both for cost and for health, in the environment that we're in today and going to be facing, you know, in the next 5 or 10 years as social media and everyone's smartphone become, you know, even more prevalent in accessing information?
Yeah. No, so let me comment on a couple of those points that you raised. So as you said, you know, generics are close to 80, maybe even 85% of all pills, and that fraction has increased tremendously over the last 10 to 15 years as a lot of drugs have gone off patent. So what is the consequence? Actually, it turns out that as that happened, the amount of sales force detailing actually shrank in the U.S. by 45%. So even compared to, like, let's say 2005, 2006, when the peak was, we used to have about 107,000 reps. Now we have about 62,000, and it'll probably go down a little bit more. So basically about 45% of this detailing effort that we've been talking about has already shrunk because, of course, there aren't that many new products to talk about, and they become generic, which don't need promotion. So already the sort of the general channel has shrunk quite a lot. The second, and we expect that a couple of interesting things will happen. On the block, you know, the large primary care drug side, there will be fewer and fewer big ones. But I think all the excitement is in the specialty side. There is close to 8,000 indications and drugs in the oncology pipeline alone over the next 10 years. And so as you see over the next 10 years, as innovations do happen, and they will happen more in the specialty area like oncology, like rheumatoid arthritis, like orphan drugs and so on, there will be more of a need to make sure that physicians are up to speed. And if the, you know, reform goes this way of the ACOs and the PCPs being the gatekeeper, they will need to know about all these new innovations coming. So even though the sheer size of the sales forces will be a lot smaller, the need for them, the need for sophisticated information, the need for the physician to stay on top of, you know, hundreds of innovations happening will still be there. And so I think that becomes a very vital piece that this research can help address and you know, help policymakers take the right direction on. And then you talked about social media and other channels, which will absolutely proliferate. Just to give you a context, all these alternate channels are about $500 million in terms of industry spend in a year right now. Sales reps are still about $10 billion. So, you know, it's about 20 to 1 right now. But we expect that these alternate channels will absolutely climb and explode relative to where they are now. But keep in mind, again, the point is not either this channel is better or that channel is better, because in the end, we shouldn't be picking one channel. You know, it's always up to the audience, always up to the physician to say all the channels are available, and then they exercise their discretion, their choice, their preference. And many of them, by the way, are using social media. They are using websites. They are okay with emails, depending on their age, their practice, you know, other demographic attributes. Absolutely. But the rep has a place intermingled with all of these. So in the future, you will see not just a rep-dominated promotion, but something that really weaves all these channels together according to the physician's preference. But of course, a lot of the physicians do prefer to talk to reps when it comes to answering their questions. And so that's why we have argued for making sure that this vital channel stays open as one of many.
I want to echo and maybe add something to what Pratap has said, Paul, is that I agree with Pratap wholeheartedly that the even though the number of branded pharmaceuticals coming to market has shrunk, the complexity of future drugs is going to dramatically increase, especially in the biotech specialty area. And this means that you need someone to sit down and answer those immediate questions that a physician has that goes beyond what they can get on a website or talking with other physicians. So this is where I think this personal interaction and discussion that you have, especially with specialty reps, as Pratap knows, you know, your average, for example, oncology rep likely has 10 to 15 years of experience out there. These are people that are well knowledgeable about drugs in the category, and thus what a physician cannot get when they go on some digital, you know, website and get information, if they have an immediate question, they cannot have that dialogue and have that discussion with an experienced person who really knows that drug and can tell, you know, the physician about the FDA regulated approved risks and benefits. And that's where I think reps are going to play even a more important role as the era of traditional small molecule research, you know, most of those targets are going by the wayside, and we move into much larger biologics, large molecules, biotech, you know, kinds of products. It's interesting that if you listen and read the academic medical journals, you would think that all physicians despise pharmaceutical reps. Yet since 2006, the AMA opt-out program, in which physicians can easily basically sign up and say, I don't want my prescriber-level data to be seen by a rep, 4 to 5% in the past 6.5 years of physicians have opted to sign up. 4 to 5% over the past 6.5 years. Clearly, if physicians thought that the information they got from reps was so biased, was so mal or misinformed, you know, we would see, you know, much, much larger percentages of physicians saying, no, I don't want my data, and thus I want to make it as difficult as possible for pharmaceutical companies to send sales reps to my offices. That's just not the case. And our paper clearly shows that when you suppress regulated medical information, unintended consequences happen. And these consequences, we believe, are likely not favorable when it comes to protecting patient health.
Well, I think that's actually a very interesting note to end on, the idea that in an age of personalized medicine, which I think you were hinting at, as medicines become ever more sophisticated and targeted at ever more niche populations, physicians are still going to want, to borrow a turn of phrase, personalized information channels, access to many different types of information, whether digital but also especially personalized, from real live human beings sitting in their offices talking to them about new products and established products as well. George, Pratap, thank you very much for your time, and we'll link to your paper. Can access limits on sales representatives to physicians affect clinical prescription decisions? Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.